the Almost Perfect Podcast.
Welcome to the Almost Perfect Podcast, a celebration of fuck-ups, failures, and falling flat on your face. This is a podcast that believes you can learn from experience, but that experience doesn't have to be your own. Ha, I'm Bob Perfect, and I'm a functional fuck-up. Let's learn from somebody else's mistakes. And today we're learning from Matt Knight. Now, Matt Knight is a pastor, and not the kind of pastor that you're thinking of. He probably goes well with a Napolitana sauce, but yeah, not that kind of pasta, my bro. fuck, that was a terrible joke to kick off this episode, but there are a lot of terrible jokes in this episode. So yeah, it's dad jokes all around because Matt is a recent father. We don't really chat about that much in the podcast, but it's definitely a part of his life at the moment. But yes, Matt Knight is a pastor, and he likes to put an asterisk next to that, because while he's officiated weddings and funerals, and I think he's probably taken a few services over the years, he's more in the HR and admin department when it comes to the business of the GOD and JC, not LaRue, you know? Yeah, he's actually the guy, he's down in Cape Town these days, although I've known him for many, many years here in Durban. But he works with 11 different churches and an NGO that tackles multiple different projects. And he just coordinates a lot of things and helps them help people. And that's why he is on this podcast, because I've got a lot of love and a lot of time for the work that Matt does and for the way he sees the world. And the effects that, you know, the way he sees the world has on the world, which I think are mostly positive, even if we don't necessarily agree on the religious side of things. You know, if you've listened to the podcast for a while, you would know that I am an atheist. At various points in my life, I've been like the super atheist. If you listen to Simi RF's latest podcast, he's got a podcast called Lesser Known Somebodies. And he had Stuart Goldsmith from ComCom Pod, the Comedian's Comedian Pod. If you're a comedian, you probably know that podcast. But yeah, Simi interviewed Stuart, and I asked a question on that podcast because it was podcast inception to the max. And yeah, Simi introduced me as like Bob the Atheist, Bob Perfect, the like super atheist, the mad atheist. And that was definitely a part of my vibe for a while. When I started comedy especially, I was the guy, you know, busy swearing God. And these days, I am not that guy at all. Like, I'm still atheist. I still don't believe in God. Well, especially not in the Judeo-Christian God or a personified God. I kind of get the idea of, you know, we're all God. Like, I'm cool with that. Like, I get that. I'm cool with some aspects of that philosophy. But, you know, the whole dude up in the sky thing, not for me. But I've also learned that we all have our own ways of dealing with this world, our own views of this world, our own, you know, just, yeah, we live in our own worlds, genuinely. And it's cool to cross over and share the ideas that we have about both this world and maybe the next one. And we get into that a little bit on this podcast. But in reality, this is a chat about music and art and culture and somewhat how they relate, you know, to religion, but or to being in the church and stuff like that. But yeah, it's a chat about the old days, man. A few of these conversations on this podcast have been like that, but Matt and I have known each other for over a decade now. I wasn't too sure. It was weird. I was like, maybe 10 years, maybe like 6 or 7, but then like I realized I've been dating my girlfriend for like 6 years now, nearly, and like that's a whole different period of my life, you know, before that and after that, and like I've got to like keep remembering that, yeah, when things happened, essentially. Like, being 33 is interesting because you're not really old, but you've had experiences, and you've had enough experiences to forget a lot of them, especially if you smoke as much marijuana as I do. But Matt is an old friend. We've had many interactions over the years. We worked on a number of different projects together. Most of them were short-lived. We had the Man Cave at Our Heart Market, which was like a little section where I was selling comic books and had a PlayStation, no, not a PlayStation, an Xbox set up for people to come jam, and Matt would make mix CDs. We had like a little mix CD thing, and he would sell cigars. And that was our hard market stand for a little while. We wanted to start a radio station. We got into the beginning stages of that and then realized, yeah, no, that's quite a task here in Durban. Matt did write for DIY a few times. Durban Is Yours, the websites I used to run. And he even DJed the launch of Durban Is Yours, which was like my attempt to try and get the Christian kids like to come out and be on board with this project. And maybe it helped, maybe it worked. Like, Matt Knight was who I tapped as my Christian influencer, I guess, back in the day. Yeah, but we share a lot of common ground in a lot of different aspects, both in just wanting to help, wanting to make the world a better place, and being anti-bigotry, anti-racism. Yeah, it's cool to see us connect on those things, even if we don't necessarily agree on the whole God thing. And that's kind of the vibe, man. That's kind of the point of this podcast, is to show that pastors are people too. And Matt's one of the coolest people. He put me onto a lot of cool music over the years. He shared a lot of cool music with me. He somehow always like knows like the raddest folk or indie kind of stuff. And even with movies and TV shows, he's put me onto some interesting stuff over the years. So he's one of my cultural plugs. Like, I don't share that too often with people. I don't let people know who influences me, because, you know, I'm meant to be the supreme influencer out here. I'm meant to be the one putting you all onto everything. But occasionally, someone else puts me onto things. And over the years, Matt's been that guy. So I guess that's the intro. I guess that tells you who Matt Knight kind of is before he tells you who he is over the next hour or so. I do need to let you know that we've got mugs available. Yes, they are R100 each, almost perfect mugs. You can see what they look like over on our social media or on the Print Room social media, because the Print Room Durban have teamed up with us for these mugs and for future merchandise that we will be creating here at Almost Perfect. I can say we there. Like, I say we a lot on this podcast and on our social media when it's mostly just me. But it's me and it's you and the entire human race. No, it's me and it's you, and it is the Print Room Durban helping us out with our merchandise. So if you need to get merchandise made, go and check them out. Other than that, mugs will be available nationwide, hopefully next week. I have ordered boxes and bubble wrap and everything like that, so I'm just waiting for that to arrive, and then I can start shipping out mugs. You can just hit me up on social media if you'd like one. They are R100 each, and 10 rand from that will be going to Sasonke. So yeah, slide in the DMs and we can make a plan when it comes to the mugs. Other than that, shout outs to Liverpool. I'm not a football fan in particular. I'll watch it if it's on. I understand the game. I dig it. It's cool. But fuck, getting invested in that narrative is a large portion of your life. And no thank you. But shout outs to, you know, all of you who have been celebrating for the last, I don't know how long now, nearly, it's for when I'm recording this, it's been about 12 hours or so since Liverpool won the league. Technically, I mean, apparently there's a slight chance they could lose it, but also apparently that's pretty unlikely. So it's just been fun to watch my friends who have been Liverpool fans for a long time. Like, a lot of my friends are Liverpool fans, like a lot of my close friends. And just to see them finally getting to celebrate this big win after 30 years, you know, it's filled my heart with joy. It's made me feel good. It's made me feel stoked. Like, sports is both the most pointless, frivolous, like, meaningless thing, and the exact opposite. It's also the most meaningful, like, joyous, and I don't know, just unifying thing at the same time. And so it's just wonderful to see those kind of things and those moments, and just the happiness it provides and the banter it provides. And yeah, shout outs to Liverpool, and shout outs to all the Liverpool fans. Things that are making me lose hope with society is leaving my flat. I went outside, and I'm sure a lot of you are seeing the vibe, but people aren't really wearing masks, and if they do, they pull them like down, and it's just a bit stressful, man, because it doesn't seem like people really give a fuck, and like that makes me lose hope in humanity. You know, it's like one of the simplest things we can do to protect each other. Like, you're not just protecting yourself, you're protecting other people. Like, that's the whole fucking thing, is just wear a mask. Yeah, it's uncomfortable, like, a little bit. Maybe try to get a more comfortable mask. Maybe, you know, but you can deal with that. There are people working 8-hour fucking days, maybe even longer, with masks on all day, with, you know, face shields on all day, and you walk outside for 10 fucking minutes to go and get your groceries, and you can't put a mask on. Fuck you. Like, just fuck you, you piece of shit. Like, fuck you. That's it. That's all I'm going to say. If you're one of those people, I don't even want you listening to my podcast. I don't want nothing to do with you because you're clearly an inconsiderate piece of shit. That's it. That's it. That's what you are. You are an inconsiderate piece of shit. It's like, and again, you know, like, people don't even wear condoms when they sleep with strangers. So, I don't know. Like, I don't know. Like, I get being self-destructive, but it just sucks when you're willing to hurt other people over fucking nonsense, over conspiracy theory bullshit, over fucking just, I don't know, man. Like, people are so willing to believe ridiculous things under the guise of being skeptical, under the guise of, you know, just, I don't know, man. Like, I get it, people are scared and they don't really know, but like, and they don't trust their governments and this and that, but like, come the fuck on. We know how viruses work. We know how these things work. There's like literally like 200 years or so now of medical history and science and data that shows us, hey, if you wash your hands a lot and you wear a mask, your chances of getting viral infections, like especially ones like COVID, lower. Like, that's how it all works. So just do those fucking things, okay? Just do that. You'll probably lower your chances of getting it. You'll lower the chances of everyone else getting it. And we can all be slightly safer. That's it. That's it. Like, there's no fucking guarantees in this world. There's very little chance. You know, we're all gonna die, obviously. And there's 6 million ways to die. Choose one. All of that. But can we try and not choose COVID as the way that we all want to die? Can we try and just choose a better death? Maybe. I don't know, because some of you seem to want to choose to die in a hospital bed or to see other people around you dying, you know, coughing up their fucking lungs in, you know, hospitals and not being able to see their friends or family. And like, yeah, cool. Sorry. Like, sorry for the somewhat depressing vibes here, but it is just really frustrating, and there's so much going on, man. Like, I'm not even going to really get into it, but if you're a part of the wrestling community online or the comedy community online, you'll see a lot of stories going around at the moment that are disturbing, to say the least. So, yeah, there's a lot of terrible fucking bullshit going on at the moment, and a lot of people just willfully being silly. And try not to be one of those people. That's, I know I'm just a comedian, podcaster, music journalist type, with very few people who actually, you know, listen to me or give a fuck about what I have to say. But, you know, if there's any of you who do, and you're not wearing a mask, unless you really have a medical condition that prevents you from doing so, please just do that. Please. Cool. Got it. Get it. Got it. Good. So yeah, that's, I guess, the introduction to the show. Just need to shout out some people. We got patrons over at patreon.com/almostperfect. That is a way that you can support this podcast. Maybe buying a mug isn't enough for you, or maybe you just appreciate that this comes out almost every single week. Almost every single week. It's the Almost Perfect podcast. We've also got Almost Live that broadcasts on Tuesdays at 7 o'clock. That is on YouTube and Facebook. And I've also got the almostperfect.co.za. It's a website that I launched last week where I'm just going to be writing. It's to share this podcast, to share Almost Live, and then also to share music, art, and culture that I love in various different ways. One of those ways is top five lists, and the other one is the check this out section, and you can go check those out for yourself whenever you want. Just almostperfect.co.za. But there is also the patreon.com/almostperfect, where we've got a whole host of people who are supporting the podcast at the moment. And obviously, I'm incredibly grateful for that, especially at this time. Things are difficult for me. Like, I'm not going to lie to you. It's like, it's difficult for all of us. A lot of people are losing work. I've lost a lot of work, especially on stage, and also some writing stuff as well. Some publications that I write for aren't taking submissions because they don't have money. So, you know, things have hit me hard, and it's been really, really, really cool that, you know, people have actually been bumping up some of their donations and that on, is it donations? It's subscriptions. It's like, I say donations because I feel like this is a charity, but it's not. It's work, and it's work that I'm grateful that some of you pay for. And the rest of you, you don't need to, you know. That's how socialism works, people. That's how socialism works. That's how your tax money works. You're busy contributing, whilst other people, they don't even pay for it. They get it for free. Like, that's the worst thing in the world, isn't it? Nah, not really. It's not at all. I'm pretty cool with that. As, I can't remember which Odd Future rapper said it, but one of them said it in one of their songs, what would I sell this for? This is free distribution. And that's very much how I feel. I love putting this out there. I love doing this. I love having these conversations. And if you love it too, then you're more than welcome to chuck a few shekels into the collection plate there. So almostperfect.com, almostperfect.co.za is where you can find everything. And patreon.com/almostperfect is how you can support the show. There are four people that are in the titular titles tier. This is the $10 tier over on Patreon. And they get shout-outs on this podcast. They are a part of the team. They are a part of it. That's why I get to say we and not just I when I post tweets about the work that I do. So shout-outs to King Julian. They've been a good supporter of my work in general. Julian came to the Winston many times when we did stand-up comedy there. And yeah, I'm super grateful. So thank you very much. Chief Sales Officer of Subtle Heresies in the Greater Overberg Region, Rousseau, shout outs to you, homeboy. Much appreciated. I've also, yeah, Rousseau sent some nice, well, some, I say some, but he sent a wonderful email a while back that really made me feel good about myself. So shout outs to you, Rousseau. Shout outs to Stephen Olafia, who is the executive producer here on the Almost Perfect podcast. He doesn't really seem to, you know, produce much, but I'll take his money anyway. So shout outs to Stephen Olafia, executive producer, and to Karan Slammon, who is the Almost Perfect youth group leader. Shout outs to you too, homie. Love your work, love your music, and one day we'll be chatting to you on this podcast. So that is it. Shout outs to the titular titles tier there on Patreon. Shout outs to Patreon, whatever. You know what I mean. And shout outs to you for listening this long to the intro. Without further ado, here comes the Almost Perfect podcast with Matt Knight. So how are you living, Matt Knight?
Hey, Bob. Doing pretty well, man. Down in a very cold Cape Town. I thought I knew what cold was in Durban winters, but I didn't have a clue. And this is our third one down here now. And yeah, it's been an interesting time. I'm sure pretty much everyone started in the last 3 months with saying how unique and interesting. And I don't think I've heard the word unprecedented before. So much. Yeah. Getting used a lot.
We've seen tweets of people being like, I just can't wait to get back to precedented times.
Yeah, I know. I didn't even know what a precedented time was, but I'm longing for it. So hearing the phrase unprecedented time and then quickly telling people on multiple video calls, don't worry, if I cough, it's a wet cough. It's not a dry cough. You don't have to panic. I've never been so excited to tell people that my cough's wet, you know? But yeah, interestingly, this is my first Skype call in lockdown. I think I've done, you know, lots of Zoom and Microsoft Teams and Google Hangouts, but the first Skype conversation. So I feel like I've covered all the bases now.
Well, personally, you know, like being the lefty punk type that I am, you know, I'm all on that fuck Zoom vibe, fuck Facebook vibe, fuck all these other vibes. But meanwhile, Microsoft owns Skype anyway, and this call is probably going straight to the FBI. So, yeah, it's unavoidable at the moment to, be recorded by the FBI, by everything. But that's none of our concerns at the moment, I think. When the Scorpions start tracing our calls, are the Scorpions even still around? Is it the Hawks now?
I think they called something else. There's some other sort of fancy animal, no longer Scorpions. Something with a Hawk sounds right.
Yeah, but they're not going to be listening to our calls. They're not going to be listening to this podcast. So I think we can say whatever we like. We've had some interesting conversations over the years. I've known you. How long has it been? Probably close to a decade now? No, not that long. Maybe six, seven years?
No, I think it's more. I think I was actually thinking about this because I figured you'd ask. And my memory is a little hazy, not for maybe the same reasons that some of your memories are hazy, but I struggle to remember teachers' names and when stuff happened. But I think it was either Bern or the Willow Vale. I saw your penis for the first time at a gig in 2009, I think.
I'm going to get cancelled. Thanks for bringing that up.
No. It was very appropriate. It was in front of a huge group of mostly guys. But you used to get naked a bit and do some moshing and stage diving. And I think it was through Lee for Mark, the legend Lee. Maybe 2008 or 2009 would be my guess.
Damn. Wow. Okay. I didn't think it was... I didn't even know it was that long ago, man. Like, it's been, but that's the thing. It's Durban's history is long and storied. And there's many different types of people, obviously, that came together in the music scene. Yeah, one thing definitely. I think people might be surprised about is with me being, you know, Bob the Super Atheist, is that you are a pastor and you used to come out to all these music events and not preach or anything like that. I think people are going to get the wrong idea about how I just introduced that.
Maybe but just DJing a little bit, but not preaching, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you were just a part of the scene back in the day, and it was cool that we would cross over and interact. Like, I love that about, like, the music scenes, because I know in the hardcore scene, we had, like, the big, like, crossover with, like, Christian hardcore being a big part of the Durban scene. You were more into, like, indie and folk and that sort of thing?
Yeah, and still am. I think that would be my, like, if you know, what's my musical taste, it would be in that kind of probably folk up front and then, like, indie, vibey, some soul. And then the love for, like, as much local stuff as possible, because I think that was another thing that we connected over a bit, is just wanting to see creatives in Durban and South Africa doing well and being supported and all that stuff. And trying to hustle to make that happen a bit in different ways. But yeah, I was kind of wondering when I'm stoked to be on the pod and chatting. We've been mates for a while and I've always enjoyed our catch-ups. But I was wondering who'd made a mistake, if I was going to regret it or if you were going to regret it. So let's chat and see. Hopefully no one. But I kind of saw that I listened to your pod and I saw that you had Madge on was it last week, and then me. So I don't know if you like working your way up to the Pope or what's happening, what the long game is here. But I'm stoked to be chatting, man. I think you're a good dude. I think we have way more in common than not. So I'm stoked to be chatting.
Well, that's sort of the vibe. I mean, it wasn't like an intentional thing of having Madge and then you. Than the fact that, like, I asked you after having, like, Majorzy on here. But it is, like, partially because, like, you know, I've been re-evaluating my idea of, you know, God. Not necessarily in terms of Judeo-Christian vibes, but just in terms of what that is for everyone else, not just myself, you know, and how it's interpreted in a lot of different ways and various things like that. So, yeah, you're someone who is in the business of God, and so that makes sense to, you know, chat to you a bit about it, because that's also the thing. We've literally always spoken about music. We've always chatted about the scene, creativity, and that. Like, I don't really remember us chatting much about religion. Is that like, why is that? You're a pastor. Shouldn't you be trying to get me on your side? Isn't that what you're part of your job?
So interestingly, it's always a little bit of a an asterisk next to the word pastor. I don't mind it, because I think when people think of that, maybe they think of, you know, weddings and funerals. Maybe not the T.D. Jakes thing, but in the Durban context, like, I think enough people would have come to maybe a wedding that I was officiating, or, you know, sadly a funeral or whatever, or if you popped into Olive Tree back in the day, between like 2008 and 2017, I would have been there. I would just disclaim that my job, which sounds a bit weird, is not actually a pastor. I like to administrative communication, HR stuff, but four churches since pretty much 2002. Three different churches in the long haul. That being said, I would be lying if I didn't say that I kind of lined up with what the pastors are saying and doing, and what the end game or what the end goal is, which is, to some extent, to maybe get people I don't like the language "on my side," but certainly I would never be shut off to talking about why I believe what I believe and why I think it's fantastic. But also, I think where we've maybe overlapped a whole lot is not just in music and the scene, but like, I think I see in you like a real desire to see people treated well, included rather than excluded, kind of not feeling, you know, prejudiced or bigoted against, feeling like connected to good other people. And so there is a whole lot more that's, you know, maybe facilitated by the music and creative scene in Durban. And I hope we'll talk about that a bunch more as well. But there's not a lot of common ground in like the, you know, people are dignified, people are worthy of love and connection. And how do we do that? We'd probably disagree on the medium to get there. I think Jesus and God is the absolute best way to answer all of those things. You know, how do I get connected? How do I find meaning? How do I get loved? And all that sort of stuff. And you go, it's a fairy tale. But that's okay. I'm totally the conversation and, you know, the humility to actually go, we don't have all the answers. And we've got to be open to the fact that we could be wrong. But if we're going to agree on a bunch of stuff, then let's keep chatting, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that is the thing for me is, I do see a lot of good within religion. Like, I've wavered when it comes to like the atheism thing, and it's because of influences and stuff. Like, when I was a bit younger, and I mean, for me personally, like, I was Christian for a while, and then I was atheist, then I was Christian, and then I was atheist again. And when I became atheist again, it was, you know, I had a lot of anger towards the church, and I felt like I was lied to in that. And then you had people like Richard Dawkins and Christopher Hitchens saying a lot of stuff that like I resonated with, but a lot of it's hateful and a lot of it's just ignorant. A lot of it is, you know, while they're compelling arguments, they negate the realities of other people's lived experiences a lot of the time. And I've learned to appreciate the fact that everyone views this world differently. Literally every single person in this world has a different view of how it works, how everything exists, how it all matters, why it all matters, if it all matters. And like, those questions, while they're important on a personal level and on a level to the world with regards to obviously the more dangerous sides of things, the more problematic sides that religions can have, that's where we need to address things and argue and, you know, bring stuff up in the public sphere and have conversations about it. But I think in general, like, people can believe in what they want to believe. That's their thing. Like, for me personally, like, up to you to decide how you want to live in this world, what you see as true, what you see as untrue. And so, I've definitely learned that God is something personal to everyone, whether you're an atheist or not. It's still a personal topic to you. It's still a personal thing. Yes. And I've just grown, like, as I said, like, before I was a bit more dismissive of it and would have been like, oh, it's all fairy tales and this and that. And that was probably a lot of my own anger at believing in some of the stuff and like taking some of it literally when it's not meant to be taken literally at all.
Yeah.
And then feeling like a fool for stuff like that. So Yeah, that's why now I do feel
Cool,
like
man.
I'm in a way more accepting place of all of it. And I just want, and like you say, like, you know, we connect on the things that I think matter. And that's the thing that I think religion sometimes can show people. And there's so many religious, you know, projects out there that are so good for the community and so good for society as a whole. Like, I look at the Dennis Hurley Center here in Durban. And while they're a super Christian organization, the work that they do with the homeless is incredible. And I will 100% support it. Even though I'm a secularist, I
For
will
sure.
support them 100% because I think the end result of what they're doing is good.
Yeah, we can agree on enough stuff to kind of maybe not bury the hatchet, but like let's talk about that over a beer or a cup of coffee. And in the meantime, we can all agree that homelessness, treating people who've been treated badly properly, taking care of like women and kids who've been abused. We can all agree on that stuff. Like taking care of your city, taking care of your neighbor, helping people who need help. Like the poor, the widow, the orphan. No one's going, or no one who's healthy in any of their beliefs is going, we shouldn't do that. So how do we kind of figure out how we band together on that stuff, and then we can, talk about the theoretical things a bit later,
Yeah, and so have you found music has been one of the ways that, you know, that has come about, that you've been able to cross over and connect with people and find people who, you know, might not necessarily believe in the same stuff as you, but are on a similar wavelength?
Yeah, I think so. I think music for sure, and then anything that's kind of in the so betterment of your city that you live in, music and creativity would be kind of the two things. So like there was some when Instagram was still photos and not videos, we had some cool stuff going on there with a few mates that was just trying to profile South African photographers anonymously. I don't know if you know about it. It was the VSCO South Africa page back in the day where we got pretty big. I think we had like 23,000 followers and about 300 or 250, 300,000 hashtags. That was
Casual flex.
purely, hey, but the point is that no one kind of knew who we were because we just, did it anonymously. But the whole point there was to feature initially great Durban photographers, but then great South African photographers that people might not know about taking photos of their city. And so I mean, at one point I know we were trying to get a community radio station going for the creators in Durban. We were involved a little bit at Unit 11 together and just trying to bring people together multiple times a week around creativity and art and music and stuff. I think a bit of Durban is your stuff, which we overlapped on. And so the point is like, how do we make the city run better, work better? And a little bit more creative. So in the music we play and listen to and the art that we're showing and all that sort of stuff. That's kind of my I guess passionate angle. Someone else might be passionate about, training entrepreneurs or helping take out unemployment problems or whatever it may be. But that was kind of my area of passion for the city that I was living in and that I loved a whole lot and wanted to kind of, help make 1% better if I could.
How did you actually get into, you know, the music and creative scene? Like, when was your first gig?
Sure. So in Durban, it was again hazy memory. I think somewhere around 2004, 2005, Splashy. We had like Sanosha and Deluxe, and then the Delphi's Tones, like the other side of it. And it was the best Splashy I'd been to. And there was like this vibe in the air with South African music that I don't know. It just felt like things were like a little bit different, and we may not agree on whether all of the bands were good, but it was like Super Hot
Well,
Joy had released some sick
Deluxe was
tracks.
good.
Black Jax had released like an amazing album, 340 Mill, Super Hot Joy. Some Fuzzy Gish gigs were happening, I think, then or a little bit later, and it just felt like there was this amazing like rising tide. And then
Well, it's
also,
like
I had,
the post tweak era essentially, like the
yeah,
post
go,
Finkelsteins, post
yeah.
the, you know, copying everything from America phase, and it was a
Yeah.
bit more, yeah, it was a bit more like, yeah, like creative.
It just felt like there was a vibe in the air. And then I had been lucky enough to go to the States and meet a couple of musos over there that like sent me home with a bought me a hard drive and sent me home with an old school hard drive full of music that I think we ended up, you remember everyone used to kind of go around with their hard drives of series and music and just do like dumps, like outside coffee shops and music shops, whatever. And it felt like there was kind of like just a wow factor in SA, but also around, you know, the indie folk world as well. So some of the stuff that we've shared over the years, like the films and I think the Thrills and Morning Benders. And
I hate that you've shared, like, I can't find it anymore, but you shared the Films EP with me that's not online.
You cannot get it. It's like, it was a bootlegged album that was their kind of like, dry run for the studio thing, which ended up being okay.
That's the thing. I thought that EP was better than what they released. Like I hear like some of the songs actually made it to release. And I was like, no, the other version was better. And I can't find those versions.
But that's just raw and sick and fantastic, you know?
But that is what like sharing music back in the day was like. It was like, I know that. Like we've all, like anyone in their 30s now that like loved music back in the day, had their hard drive with their music on, and you would take it to your friend's house, and you would, I don't know, personally I had folders that I would never share, like, you know, with everyone, like some of them like you had to earn those folders, but you had your public folder where it was like, yeah, I take all of this, you know. And I know some musicians are like, fuck you, but that led to me eventually buying albums and buying merch and supporting various bands over the years. So I think we wouldn't have it even known. We wouldn't, like, that's the thing. Piracy, I think, has helped music in a lot of ways and media in a lot of ways. Obviously it's hurt in some ways, but it hasn't hurt anywhere near as much as record labels have. So
Totally. And I think it felt like a bit more of the, I don't know, semi-independent. So, like, you know, it was a Napster or the website that first started doing it, where guys could like independently load their stuff up, and it felt like
LimeWire.
And so I mean, like you said, the stuff that we ended up liking, I would order CDs from overseas and go to way more local gigs and buy the merch and support. But you wanted to kind of hear it and experience it together first, and then, you know, play it on the playlist when you get asked to make a playlist for the venue that you're at, or when you're DJing a little bit. And so it felt like, I mean, maybe we, you know, took a few cups of tea and sandwiches away from some struggling musicians in Durban, and I would be very sorry for that. But it felt like we were actually going, hey, look at how much cool stuff there is to share, and building a little bit of momentum and support. So hopefully it was more that than the bad side of it, you know?
Yeah. And what was DJing like for you? Because you've mentioned it a couple times now. You've gotten behind the decks. I remember Unity 11, you were DJ. I remember you actually DJed the Durban Is Yours launch. So
that was who is Gogo Bronco, eh? And then
Gogo Bronco,
Ryan,
Fuego,
DJ Fuego. I remember. I think you said to me, you know, I've got most of the bases covered, but if you could get like the Coca-Cola buying, you know, Christian guys, then we could double our like attendance, so we can kind of just go a little bit wider here. So I mean, look, like I never really wanted to ever be on the stage or be Limelight stuff, but I had a whole lot of vinyl that I picked up in the States. There was this family in Virginia who were just really like super generous and rad, and they used to go away once a year as a family and fly me to the States to house sit their house that didn't need house sitting, and then like pay me. So like they were just like a really like kind, well-off family, and they, so I did that 4 or 5 times in a 5-year period, and every time I would just like take their Jeep that they'd give me the keys to and go raid like the Washington DC and New York and Boston record stores for like indie and folk stuff, which I've still, you know, I've sold a bunch of it over the years when I needed to, but I've still got probably, you know, 70 or 80 of those records sitting in my record player. And back then there was kind of like at a Unit 11, it was kind of like it would be fun to have somebody playing some modern stuff off of vinyl. Fuego took care of the old school stuff, and I did a little bit more of the new stuff. So if I remember right, I don't remember dates, but I remember, I think, opening up with Harlem Shakes.
Strictly Game.
I mean, it didn't happen that many times, probably maybe 10 or 15 times, mostly at Unit 11. But it was just that thing of like, I love what's happening. I'd love to share it with people, and I'd love Durban to kind of be like Durban scene and the bands that are getting booked and visiting, and that to kind of go up a bit, you know.
Yeah, I remember you also used to make like mix CDs and give them out. I know you contributed to quite a few of the cafes in Durban, right?
Yes, like, that's right.
I know, because like I would hear music at like various cafes that I was working at and be like, there's no way that like, you know, someone here like has put this together. Like, there's no way. This is a Matt Knight mix. And I would ask and be like, is this a Matt Knight mix? And they'd be like, yep. Yeah. That happened like the Factory Cafe. Cool. Like, yeah. And there were a few other places.
Factory and Bean Green there well. Savior Cafe, when they started going, I think, had a little playlist. But yeah, it was like, it's kind of felt like everything was tied together a bit. So yeah, Dan and the Haruki guys doing a bit of like design visual stuff, and then some of my mates were musos and in the photography scene as well, making some videos, owning coffee shops or meeting up at coffee shops. And so I mean, Durban never feels like a massive place, even though it is, but somehow all of those things were kind of happening together. Like, I think in the same year that you was Durban as yours, 2010 or 2011?
I think it was 2011.
Yeah, like, and almost within a month of each other, like through the church. So we've always been involved in like some nonprofit charitable stuff at the same time. You know, I just want to be talking theoretically, but getting stuck into
you. Yeah, you were with Olive Tree Church, right?
That's right. Yeah. And so we started a thing called We Are Durban, which was basically going, hey, there are so many fantastic charities and nonprofits in KZN. All of them have an amazing vision and heart to help people. What they kind of lack is like the structure and support to go, here's how funding can be transparent. Here's how our systems can really serve. And so by kind of starting this thing, we were able to serve, I think it was like 1,800 nonprofits in Durban, all to be a little bit better at what they were doing. So, you know, if all your soup kitchens are running as well as they can, and all your like women's shelters and all your, you know, orphanages and all your education and job readiness training are running to the best of their ability, everyone's better off for it, you know. And it just struck me that I think we were chatting and you told me about Durban is Yours and I told you about We Are Durban, and just that kind of that similarity in name from very different angles, but going, we care about this place that we live in. We want it to be a little bit better. And so it kind of just felt like there was a little bit of synergy from the like our very first conversations and hanging out. And so, yeah, it was cool to see a bit of the overlap, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think I've become a bit more cynical about the Durban creative scene over the years. But I definitely still feel I feel more passionately now about actually like helping in other spaces, you know, like, and spending my time and energy on actually, like helping things on the ground. Whereas like this platform, the website and those sorts of things are like, you know, it's no longer just, you know, about putting a light on Durban stuff and, you know, helping Durban creatives and that's what Durban is Yours was. Yeah. This is more just shining a light on all the things that I love,
things
the
that various are all different. Perfect.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, it is about that. It's about things not quite being right. It's about the people who aren't, you know, what you see, like, on TV, you know, the perfect people. It's, sure, you know, the people who are trying. It's the people who are doing things and, you know, not necessarily getting it right, but getting it close. And that's what's... Yeah, that's what I enjoy in life. Those are the stories that I like to hear. And
that's great, man.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I think, like, with you, I've always seen that side of you. You know, you're someone who's always just strived to make things better. You know, you might not necessarily be doing it on a grand stage or, you know, have, like, that's the thing. You're not T.D. Jakes, you know? You're not doing these grand things. You're just... In my mind, you know, like the meek shall inherit the earth kind of thing, like you're somewhat a prime example of that. You're just a humble, chilled guy who likes to make a difference. But one of the things that I think is kind of interesting is also that you do that through administrative skills, right?
Yeah. Like
that's one of your big skills. Because I remember when you were trying to like do the radio station thing. Like that was a big part of it, and you understood things that I had no clue about. And now you're busy talking about with the soup kitchens and stuff like that, you know, busy bringing stuff under better administration and stuff like that. So is that one of your skills? Is that how you actually
Improve things? I think so. I mean, thanks, man. Like, it's really kind to hear. Like, I think I probably feel pretty similar. Like, I've always felt like, you know, you kind of want everyone around you to be better and to be seen for the skill they have, and to kind of expose people who maybe, you know, aren't getting heard enough or seen enough that are really talented. And so, I appreciate that, but I see a bunch of that in you as well. I think if I could say this, I feel like I'm probably at most things, like I cap out at a 6 out of 10. Like that's my skill set in any one area is like a jack of some trades. But in the 6 out of 10 things that I feel like I can do like as well as most people through experience and stuff is one, it's like if you got a cool vision, I feel like I'm the guy to help you get organized in a way that's going to get you there. So administration and systems, I feel like I'm going to help creatively maybe communicate in simple, sticky language, like why are we trying to do what we do? And whether it's like a bit of branding or whether it's a bit of writing or whatever, like, you know, how do we get that fantastic vision across? So get organized, get creative, and then like, are the people the right people and are they kind of taken care of? So those are the three things that I try to say to anyone who wants to like work with me or hire me or get involved in a passion project. Like, hey, those are the things that I feel like I can do pretty decently. It's not bad being able to kind of lean in and do that stuff. And what I love about it is the bottom line is always people, whatever you believe faith wise or about Jesus or about God, is at the end of the day, people's are like getting taken care of, you know? And, I think that's really important to me.
Yeah. I mean, that's, I think, like, yeah, we've discussed kind of the baseline thing, but when it does come to Jesus and God, what are your understand? I know this is a very big question, but what are your understandings of those words, I guess? You know, who is Jesus to you? Yeah. Who is God to you, if you don't mind me getting into it?
No, cool. I'd love us to talk about religion and politics and then try and make as many friends as possible, because that's the best way. I know how to do that. You know? No, I don't mind it at all, man. And I would just say that my preference for this stuff would probably always be over a cup of coffee or beer, like I've said before, to chat about it, because there is so much nuance. So like there's not many areas in the world where you can say a statement and it can be like such a calm and receptive and lovely thing to one person and such a painful, jarring, hurtful thing to another. And I think, you were saying it earlier, like there's probably good and bad people in humanism and every religion across the world. But there is in religion and especially Christianity, there's abuse taken by bad people and that use like faith and hope and grace to actually like take advantage of people and to oppress people. And I just think it feels like the stiffest, hardest thing to get your head around. And when I go, hey, that's my like greatest hope, my greatest kind of experience, the thing that I like literally feel like I runs through my blood, it makes it even harder to kind of process. So I would just want to say, I'd probably prefer to do this individually, but I am very happy to tell you like pretty much what I believe about it. So in the beginning, a very good place to start, you know, Genesis 1 John, Eddie Izzard stand up and my answer now. My starting point would be, I believe that we're designed by someone with like intent, good intent. We're all created, every human that exists, in the image of God. So something called Imago Dei, which is in the Genesis story that I read, is the only time God looks at what he's made and says, that's very good, is when he comes up with this concept of humans, and not just in individual humans, but humans in community with him and in community with each other. He's making stuff and he's going, you know, the coast of Norway and like the universe, whatever, that's all good. The only not good is that people would be alone, and the only very good is that people would be in community with him and with each other. So my starting point is I look at every person and I go, I believe you made in the image of God. I then would say that in a very like truncated version, for different reasons, we're all marred by brokenness and by whether you want to call it darkness or sin or, you know, shortfalls or whatever, and not just our individual stuff. Like, I do think you probably have to teach every kid to share and not to bite and not to hit and stuff. So I think there's an individual thing, and obviously it's those little things are not the point, but the way we take advantage of each other, the way we are kind of selfish and how we treat people and their bodies and their minds and stuff. We've all got what I would call a brokenness problem. But also, like, I mean, what the world is talking about now, they are literal systems of brokenness. Like, yeah. the culture that oppression. We grow up in has oppression, has stiffness about it, and, you know, every war, every bit of hectic stuff and prejudice connects back to, I think, an evil that, you know, we don't have time to dive into now where it comes from. But I think we could all go, yeah, it exists. Surely this, if this is all pure accident of evolution and survival of the fittest, then cool, that kind of makes sense, because you just, you know, dog eat dog until the biggest dog is left. But if there is some sort of, like, yeah, sorry, I don't want to oversimplify.
It's slightly deeper than that, but yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, I don't mean to treat anything tritely, but just to say, I think most people would be able to look at the world and go, the system's broken, man. Like, there's just, there's loneliness and there's oppression and there's a whole lot of heartache that I don't think any of us truly believe we're designed for or that we exist for, even if you don't believe in a designer. And so I go, like, of all the man-made solutions and of all the different things that I've ever seen, the idea of, like, a servant, the most powerful being in the universe, becoming a servant king, not to overthrow a political party, not to, like, build a nationalist country, not to try and wipe out his enemies, but to go to a cross so that the brokenness can be taken care of, not instantly, but Jesus talks about his kingdom as it's here, it's coming one day, it's delayed, and it's nearby, all at the same time. And so you probably see pockets of amazing stuff happening and breaking out around the world, but we know we're not there yet. But there's a one day that I have a hope for, that because of what he did, that me and, you know, the people that I want to share the story with, but all of mankind has been reached out to with grace and like undeserved love and affection and kindness, and an invitation to go, hey, if you don't want that life, if you don't want that brokenness and the kind of the remnants of the world of pain, then come to a kingdom that is about grace and gentleness and kindness and you know, unconditional love. And I found that in the person of Jesus. And it's interesting. I think our paths were almost like the graphs were almost the direct opposite. I think you grew up in Christian school and education, and that I never went to church before, I think, the age of 17, never heard about any of this stuff. And so it was kind of like in those formative years heading towards the end of school that I kind of encountered that message and that idea of the kingdom of God being the thing that could invade every country, every system, whatever, but not to take it over and try and overthrow it with power, but to kind of subserviently lay its life down to better others, you know? And yeah, that would be my, like, what is that, 3.5 minute probably spiel on why I'm doing what I'm doing with my life, man.
That's, like, I get that. I get that more in a, like, not quite metaphysical level, but
maybe conceptual. You know?
Yeah, like, understanding Jesus as, like, being love and God as being love has definitely, like, helped shift my mindset a lot of the time when it comes to these things. And, like, yeah, because that's where I think it overlaps in all the various different religions, and not just religions, you know, philosophies. And because, like, when I hear you talking about some of the stuff, like, you know, the good and the evil, like, it does remind me of the Tao a little bit, well, my understanding of it when it comes to, you know, yin and yang. And
yes, for sure.
But even though the Judeo-Christian stuff kind of takes it more into a actual being, you know, God is
that's the idea, whether you believe it or not. The preposition is that it's a person who can tell you what, like, if you want to know what God's like, you can look at Jesus. That's the theory, you know?
Yeah, whereas on the other side, it's more just that God is everything. You know, it is being. Like, that is, yeah. So that's, I do just find it kind of interesting that there are so many different ideas and interpretations, and that, you know, someone can feel like you do, and then someone can feel kind of similarly, but be, you know, Muslim or be you know, on any number of different.
Yeah, or humanist or agnostic or you know, yeah.
So how do you, yeah, how do you reconcile that? Like, I mean, I know you, well, yeah, I'll just let you answer the question.
So how do I reconcile that, that, you know, it, a bunch of the religions seem to be saying a similar thing in a different way?
Yeah. And like, you've picked this one in particular as, you know, the one that so, you're going.
For sure. I think it would probably be the right thing to say that, in terms of my 6 out of 10 skill set, being the academic able to explain the stuff would be more like the 3 out of 10 thing. But what I would say is, if anyone's interested in it, there's a dude that I really respect and admire called Rabbi Zacharias, who actually just passed away a couple of weeks ago, who does this, like, you know, phenomenal bit of work with a highly respectful, highly like gentle tone of going, you know, like, amongst other gods, and what does it mean that most religions and worldviews seem to have the same thing. But I would probably say, you know, tongue in cheek, that if a bunch of religions are kind of saying a similar thing, maybe it means that, you know, one of them is true. In the whole elephant analogy, someone can see the whole elephant. I just feel a bit uncomfortable going, like, in, you know, in an hour chat with someone who I dig and respect, you know, I've got the elephant and no one else does. But I think I've got the elephant. I would be lying if I didn't say that. And like, that's, I don't think it's a, I hope it's not an arrogance that like I've come to the end of my learning conversations with people of multi-faith, multi-background, all that sort of stuff, because I feel like it's a great sign of maturity to be going, I don't know a whole lot of stuff and I want to learn a whole lot of stuff. And I think the best way to do that is to treat people well and keep talking and keep learning. I mean, so I would hope it wouldn't be that, but I think it's hard to get away from my personal lived experience of what it's meant and what I've seen, you know, that Christ do in a bunch of lives around me, and how just real it feels in terms of satisfying, not just my mind's curiosity, but I would say like some of my heart stuff, some of my will stuff, and some of those kind of big, you know, 3 a.m. lurking questions. Like, it's just the more I talk to people in different worldviews and different experiences, the more I get like encouraged and excited about what I believe, and not in like a I'm right, you're wrong way, but in like a flip, there's so much that just makes sense and resonates here with me, you know. But I do think it would be doing people a bit of a disservice to like go, here's what you need in my 5 minute spiel, just believe what I believe. But I would definitely say that there's an invitation to come chat a bit more, you know.
Fair enough, man. I don't know, I don't really know where to go now, because these are big questions and I want to ask you a little question now, and I don't know what that little question is. How has people's idea of you and the church been with regards to, you know, like your secularness in a lot of ways? Like you're friends with me, Louis de Villiers, Lieve Mark, you know, like people who have been known to not lead the most Christian lives, essentially. And, you know, you've enjoyed a lot of art that I would say is outside Christian sensibilities in some regards, depending on how conservative you are with that. I mean, you've shared like some amazing movies with me that, you know, like I would imagine some people in the church would be like, oh, I can't believe you watched that. So sure. Do you get any of that kind of stuff? Are people ever at odds with you about, you know, how you are a part of the world, or, you know, people mostly on your side?
Yeah, I actually lived with Louis in Durban for a couple of years, and that was really fun. I dig Louis and haven't actually spoken to him for long enough, so I'm just giving him a little shout after this. But I think the best way to go, like, you know, how would their experience be is, I mean, chat to Louis, chat to Lee, chat to Bob, and see. The hope is that there's quite a lot of normalness in, like, our connection. And I think you use the language often of, like, what's the common ground? Like, what's the stuff that we can overlap on? And then when we do build enough of that, it feels like it's quite an enlightening good thing to talk about the stuff that we disagree about. And all that. And so I would say that that's kind of my approach to this stuff, is find the common ground and then venture into the places where you're different, because there's enough like maturity and love for each other to be able to do that. But it's interesting. I've often had people be quite surprised when they found out what I do. So like, I've got a bunch of mates who wouldn't believe anything near that what I do. I've got a bunch of family who I love so much, who are, like, scratch their head a little bit at like what I've done with my life and all that.
Can you just tell us what you actually do? Because I mean, you do a lot.
Yeah, for sure. So I think the last 3.5 years I've been working at a group of churches in Cape Town. There's 11 churches and then one nonprofit that's actually kind of three nonprofits. So what they do is they kind of identified a few years ago what the biggest needs were in Cape Town, and they went, people struggling to get work. So can we train people to be work ready and get employed? Education is a real problem across racial and historic apartheid lines, and what can we actually do about that stuff? Because the people, you know, if you're born in the wrong area, your kind of postcode is determining the school you go to, and it's determining so much of your future. And then one step back from that is people in similar situations are in those first 1,000 days of life. So from conception to 2 years old are really like, you know, there's the gaps in inequality and the brokenness in South Africa are most, I think, observable when you look at about 2 years old, the difference in two kids because of access to parents, access to nutrition, basic building blocks of health and life and love and safety. If they're not there, by the time they get to school in grade R or in grade one, the gap is so big that the teachers are like, we don't know we're ever going to close this. Common Good, it's called, looked at these three areas and went, if we could make one big difference in the city of Cape Town, or three big differences, it would be in those areas. How do we help families who are pregnant in those first 1,000 days? How do we help school-going kids get a great education? And how do we help train people for unemployment? And so the group of churches and this nonprofit rather than all of them kind of doing all their admin and all their communication and all their staffing and stuff separately, they do it in one place, citywide team. So rather than having to have 11 bookkeepers doing the books and graphic designers making the poster, we just got one in the middle that does it, or a couple in the middle, and I run that. So again, that administration, communication, looking after people, kind of all three of those things feel like they get flexed there. And yeah, the end result is trying to help people in 11 different geographies, from like suburb of Langa down to the South Peninsula, Fishhook, up to Table View, and then from the City Bowl out to Durbanville. So it's like, you know, probably all within an hour of each other, but the idea of like a close geographic spiritual home and then hands on the ground actually doing the stuff that we think God would want us to do if he exists. Yeah.
So why do you think people wouldn't believe that's what you do?
Why wouldn't they? Sorry, say that again.
Like you're saying just now, like, you know, like people around you.
Generally, if you say to someone, like if I meet one of Christy's school friends or someone at a wedding and they're like, so what's your job? And I say, no, I work for a church. And they're like, they're kind of like, if they don't have the frame of reference, they'll probably go, so like, are you a reverend or you're a vicar or whatever? And so the explanation takes like 5 minutes to backtrack and go, well, actually, if you want to talk in corporate terms, I'm in like HR, logistics, and project management. And they're like, but why would a church need that or want that, you know? So that's why I chuckle and say it's not exactly like the quickest explanation in the world. Because if I said to you I was in like, you know, a general manager role for, I don't know, whatever. My best friend works for Lillette's in Durban. So if I was like, yeah, I'm the general manager for Lillette's, it's pretty easy for you to connect that dot. But when I go, like, I do that stuff for a group of churches, people like, you can see they don't always have a frame of reference, you know?
Yeah, I get that. You've done a lot of weddings and, as you say, funerals as well. What got you into doing that, into officiating?
Yeah, so I think I did a few weddings before I got married, which is now 7 years ago. And you
Thanks
were there.
For inviting me, by the way. You're like I've had like, you know, people I grew up with not invite me to their weddings. And you invited me, so I felt very special and very like, No, like, not, that's not rough. Like, I'm taking the person away, but like, I'm just saying, like, I do appreciate, like, yeah, that you invited me to your wedding, man. It was a really, really great day, and it was really, yeah, it was a wonderful wedding. It was a very special, like, just, it was cool because it was like, yeah, me, Louis, Lee in the back smoking, like,
yeah,
all the church people are there, you know, and like, yeah, it was a wonderful experience.
Oh, thanks, dude. It was good to have you there, man. I'm stoked you can make it. Yeah, I think so. Working for churches as long as I did, Christy, who's my wife, and I used to run a pre-marriage course, which is basically, you know, it was open to anyone in the church, but also pretty much anyone who was getting married that wanted to like get a few basic building blocks. Because I think it's a lot of it's a thing a lot of people like, you know, feel like they're naturally going to go into without ever really maybe asking the question, what's it like? Or like, how do you kind of get start off on a good foot? And so we used to invite anyone who wanted to come, and the basic building blocks were like, how do you communicate with each other? How do you do conflict well? Like, how do you support and love each other? How are you going to do your calendar? How are you going to do your finances together? And how are you going to like treat your mates and your family? Because you've all got like this normal way that you grew up. And you think it's normal, and then you get married and you realize that you're not normal, and that you're trying to figure out a whole new way of doing stuff with someone who's not like super different to you, no matter how great they are and you are, like you're so different. And so 3 years of doing that, you know, you meet a lot of people who then are getting married.
Did you and Christy do that before you guys got married?
No. We did it from the year we got married.
Okay.
The weddings I did before that were like kind of mates and family and whatever. And then I ended up, she's from that time, from when we got married, the next 3 years, I think I did like 20 weddings a year.
Was it like an advert? Was your wedding an advert for everyone?
No. It was more that like you go to one wedding and you do a half decent job. And then suddenly everyone's like, oh, that's like a young dude who's not wearing a dog collar. Which always seems to be the thing that like can, you know, freak people out. He's not wearing a dog collar and robe. He talks kind of normally, makes some jokes, and he's over in 12 minutes. Like, you know, they sang their vows 12 minutes in. That sounds amazing. And so, you know, again, you do something at 6 out of 10, you get a reputation, and then people start inviting you. And so I think like it was, you know, friends of friends and then people who did that course together and all that. And then, yeah, ended up doing a lot of those until we moved to Cape Town, and then no one knows you. And so I've had like a glorious gap of like doing 6 in the last 3 years, 4 of which were back in Durban, you know. So it was nice to get my Saturdays back, I'm not gonna lie.
Oh man, that's I wonder if like many pastors feel that way about Sunday mornings, and like maybe like I know a lot of people wanted churches back open like with Corona, but I'm sure some were like, oh, I can sleep in on a Sunday.
That glorious lion, man. Yeah, totally. Exactly. You never know. Although they cheekily usually, I think, take either a Friday or a Monday. So they have, you know, it's not exactly the same because there is something glorious about a Sunday and getting to lie in and not have to do much. But yeah, man, that's how we got into weddings. And yeah.
How did you, I mean, we can take it all the way back. How do you said you got into the church around 17, right? How did that come about?
So, like I said, my folks would probably still scratch their head a bit and go, hey, we're not sure, probably somewhere in the like curious agnostic kind of range. My dad was the one of the editors for the Mercury in KZN, so a journalist and then an editor for a long time. And so, I mean, we've had cool chats about all this stuff because we obviously dig each other, and now with his first little grandson on the way, we're on the video calls regularly. Not on the way, he arrived 7 weeks ago. And so he once said to me, or we were talking, and he was like, you know, seeing the worst of the world's headlines and the worst of humanity, because it's what kind of sells papers for his 45 years or whatever, I think it jars you a little bit. And so they never really were into church stuff and all that. And then it was actually through a group of mates in high school. I kind of got bullied a little bit in high school and ended up changing groups of mates a couple of times. And I won't dive too much into the details of why, but it was kind of for standing up, even, you know, this is before faith stuff, just standing up for some things that I felt was right.
Relatable.
Yeah. Again, another thing that we probably shared a bit. But I wasn't at a Christian school. I was at a big, you know, anonymous...
Well, that's like, I went to the Christian school after, like, so I found God pretty much because of the same stuff. Like, I was being bullied at Glenwood, and I eventually left there. Well, no, at Glenwood High.
Right. Okay, so did you change in high school?
Yeah, okay. I changed in standard eight. Like, I left Glenwood and then went to Sycamore Christian Academy, which was also a somewhat regrettable decision at this point. I definitely don't recommend ACE schooling because of a lot of different things, but I do recommend homeschooling if you can do it.
I don't think we would send our kid or kids to a Christian school at all. I don't think it teaches you what you need to get taught. So if the thing is like a fantastic infiltrating kingdom that comes out of like an identity, you want to like be involved and be in circles of people that don't believe what you believe to kind of connect and love them. And so, like, you know, going back to your question of why would you be involved in stuff that's so obviously not church, I think that would be one of the motivators. It's not like the door-to-door pamphlet drop. Like, I think there's like a mutual like respect and like a genuine care there, but I do think like I want to be around people who don't believe what I believe for the rest of my life. That's just something that's in me, you know. So at school that happened, and I kind of floated out a real solid group of mates for about a year and a half, and then in grade 11 met a bunch of dudes who were in matric that all happened to be in a church thing, and basically just went along because it was something to do on a Friday night. You know, back when Friday night youth group was a big thing. Yeah, exactly. Home cell on Wednesdays. There was a blonde girl there.
Yeah, Lisa, pretty similar story for me.
Reason, you know. And then just in the midst of all that, sitting at the back and you know wanting to go to play foosball and McDonald's afterwards, and that something kind of just like resonated hard and made a lot of sense. I was going to go study a BCom the next year after finishing school, which my dad was stoked on. Because initially it was like, should I also do journalism? And he's like, no, don't. and then I was going to go, you know, do some business stuff with that entrepreneurial edge, and then ended up doing like an internship for a church where I was like the sound dude and the video dude and the audio guy, which is how I got into like my love for music and sound mixing and bands and all that sort of stuff. Pretty much outside of like a year and a half in the UK where I was a manny, I've been working for churches ever since.
Oh, damn. And you didn't land up studying?
I did a little bit of correspondence stuff. I got, you know, on my 60% thing, I got about 2/3 of a BCom, which I like to bring out every now and then. But Christy's,
I like that. Literally 6 out of 10.
Yeah, exactly. I've got more than half of it, so surely I have the degree.
It's a 50% pass. So
that's it. I worked too hard, man. I should have stopped at 51% of the modules. But she's a special needs teacher, which is one of the reasons we moved to Cape Town for a cool opportunity for her here. But so she's the qualified one, and I ride her coattails a little bit, you know.
But you do still, like, I know you to be quite someone who consumes a lot of media. I take it you read quite a lot as well.
Yeah, I read a lot of books. Last year I read about 50, which was a standard year. Dig a bunch of creative movies and funny series. I think in our top, we were having a banter on Twitter about our top 5 American comedies the other day. There's a lot of overlap there. Just to know how the world thinks and how people think probably makes you able to connect with dudes and people well and understand their worldview, because I think I want to understand where people are at and how they think, what makes them laugh, so that we've got more connection points, you know?
Yeah, I kind of did bring it up earlier and we didn't really get into it properly, but how do people in the church respond to that? To that sort of stuff?
I think I started saying, you know, with weddings, whatever, people are surprised, like, oh, cool, like you work for a church. I wouldn't have expected that. And I think probably the churches that I'm at would be quite full of people that think similarly to the way I do. It's not every church, but I think it's a bunch of the churches that I've been at and the people I'm involved at also think that, you know, there's this whole world going on, and the idea is not to be like the old monk way or the bomb shelter, mentality of how do we get the heck out of here because we're surrounded by terrible people. And it's also not the mirror thing, which I think a bunch of churches do, which is how do we be exactly like culture, but you know, how do we be in the culture, loving it for what it is, being good citizens in our city, and good neighbors, but at the same time very proud of the kind of message and hope that we feel like we've got. And so that's, some very like religious traditional Christians would maybe, you know, scowl at it a little bit, and some people who've got no church or Christian worldview would scratch their head and not understand why why Kurt Vonnegut's your favorite author, or you know, why you watch some of the series that you do. For the most part, I found it's most people just kind of nod along when they get to talk to you about it for a while.
Why is Kurt Vonnegut your favorite author? Because you actually gave me a copy of Slaughterhouse-Five many years ago. And ever since then, I've now got a whole collection of Kurt Vonnegut books, and I've read about half of them. So
what have you got, by the way?
Cats in the Cradle. Else is up there? Galapagos. Breakfast of Champions.
Okay, Breakfast of Champions, yeah. Yeah, there's just very few people who can turn a phrase like he can. I think it's weird because you read him now where he was in the early days of tech and sci-fi, he was kind of walking about some stuff and pontificating on where the world could go. And then he inserts like a very relatable, ordinary, flawed person into the middle of the chaos. And in some ways, like I think my favorite novelist is a guy called Robert Goddard, who does like it's a bit of a crime whodunit vibe, and he does a similar thing. Just ordinary people trying to figure out the chaos would be like how I would kind of maybe describe myself a little bit and how I go about stuff. And one of the first things I read of his was Dead Eye Dick, which remains one of my favorite books. I read Dead Eye Dick and Catch 22 by Joseph Heller at the same time. And they two of my to this day like favorite books. Again, utter chaos of war in Catch 22 and normal people just trying to stay sane or accepting their insanity and what's going on around them. I don't know. There's something in humor and wit and interest, whatever, that, you know, it makes my brain and my heart a little bit better. And then it scratches that curiosity to go find out more. It's like good music, hearing it, like reading a good author or watching a good series. Like it just does something that, I don't know, inspires me to go and learn stuff and grow a little bit as a human, you know?
Yeah, it helps. Like I find Vonnegut, helps to, highlight the madness of the world, but then also give you hope within that madness and allow you, like with the humor, allow you to laugh at the most absurd things. And
that's it, exactly it.
In a weird way, like Vonnegut, like gives a similar thing, like, you know, I guess then in some ways the Bible, like in terms of just like giving you this thing of here's how the world is. It may seem insane, but here's some sort of, you know, calming presence, maybe.
I think see that a whole lot. I don't know if you've read his memoirs. It's called A Man Without a Country, which is very, very worth borrowing or getting or whatever and reading.
I'll get it from the archives.org. Hopefully it'll be in there.
Yeah, totally. And I think like what you said, so there's this chaos all around us. It's probably not what we expected, but there's a glimmer of hope. It's not a fool's hope. It's like a tangible, real something that you can maybe hang your hat on. And ordinary people get to find it and experience it. And it's definitely not all like rainbows and butterflies, right? So there's always some sadness that goes with it, kind of thing. So I think that's one thing. But then he talks about the difference between like, so he's a pure humanist, as far as I can tell, he would go, there's not much beyond this world. But his thing of like downplaying nationalism and upplaying like, whether you call it Ubuntu or whether you call it the human spirit or like the collective connection or whether you call it like the kingdom of God, like I think he was scratching on that same itch that I think I kind of experienced. And so I resonate with him on that as well. And so that's why I think he stayed as one of my favorite. And Terry Pratchett, like again, humor and normality in like a weird universe.
The absurdity, like, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
Where we connect a lot. Like, because same, like, I've got Mort literally sitting on my back table here that I'm going to read as soon as I'm...
It's the best Terry Pratchett book by far, man.
Yeah, I read it years ago, and then I found it in a secondhand store the other day. So I'm currently reading Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance. But I think that's going to be next. But I think that is actually also largely where we connect, is using art and culture to try and make sense of the world, and then letting that art and culture, you know, guide us a lot of the time. I mean, for you, like, I know it's a bit of a different way to see it, but to me, you know, like, religion is also, you know, art and culture in its own way. Like, it's there's very much a lot of art to religion, and there's art to philosophy and everything like that as well, and religion and philosophy crossover. But I'm trying to figure out what I was actually trying to say there.
Maybe
the
absurdity
of the world and trying to be good, like, seem to be the thing we connect on in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And, like, I think the, you know, there can be kind of dryness and trying to be, like, right or superior in every worldview and in every bit of, like, literature and all that. And I think that's what puts me and puts us off. Whereas there's this, like, this little bit of an ingrained humility plus curiosity plus creativity. And I think I jump at that, and I think you seem to jump at that stuff as well. And it's kind of it's a beautiful mess, hey? Like, it's a flawed way of going about stuff that, I don't know, for me, just I can't for a moment pretend like life's all, like, easy and things are all together. Like, it's a mess of people trying to figure out the world and not hurt anyone but actually help. And I agree. Art and literature and, for me, faith, all nudge me towards that stuff, you know.
Would you ever consider getting into stand-up comedy? Has that ever been something you've wanted to do? Because there are a lot of similarities, obviously, between being a pastor, not necessarily the kind of pastor you are, although you do like weddings and stuff like that.
And public speaking, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Has it ever been something you've considered, and do you consider it to be similar jobs?
It has. It definitely has. So there's probably a whole lot of similarities, you know, like, you're always hoping for more people to turn up than actually turn up. You know, you're hoping more people are going to put money in the tin than actually put money in the tin. And, in your worst moments, you feel very exposed up there. But then, like, there's that connection where something hits home and, like, you know, people start to shift in their chair and the energy resets and all that sort of stuff. And there's, like, a connection around, you know, what's hopefully true and what's hopefully, like, maybe a bit vulnerable and stuff. And so I think preaching and stand-up comedy has, I learn a lot from, like, you know, I don't actually watch a whole lot of stand-up comedy. I like clever situational comedy more naturally. So both British and American, like, if it's witty.
Have you seen Simon Amstel's stand-up comedy, though? Because I know you're a fan.
I have seen. So I like Simon Amstel's stand-up comedy. I love Simon Amstel on, like, the Buzzcock years. And I would take that. You know, I don't know why I would take that setup a little bit more. And in some ways, it's a bit more authentic and a bit less scripted and all that. And I think that there's something in there. But I mean, Eddie Izzard's probably the one guy who I can go, he's my absolute favorite. I've watched his stuff over and over again. And I try to learn a lot of the skills of holding attention, using humor at the right moments to not just get a laugh, but to make a great point, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, like that whole Dan Pink thing, that book of why right-brainers will rule the world. I think it's called, his book's called A Whole New Mind or whatever. And he's like, you've got to move. It's so good, man. It's like, he talks about how you've got to move. It can't just be function. You've got to design stuff, and it can't just be fact. You've got to weave in story, and it can't just be, like, information. You've got to have meaning, and it can't just be elements. You've got to have a symphony. And so he just talks about, like, how when you actually help people cross over in their brains and so telling stories, like, you know, getting a few laughs, being a little bit vulnerable up on stage, which I know stand-up comedy is very, it's like folk music with just you and a guitar. It's very vulnerable, like you're exposed, right? Yes, there's a lot of similarities. I did think about doing a couple of sets, because I mean, I've probably emceed, like, I don't know, maybe 100 21st and birthdays and weddings and stuff like that.
You've probably got more gigs than I have in terms of that.
Yeah, but no one's ever pays me, bro. I just, you know, I get a free piece of cake and some overcooked roast beef.
Oh, you don't even get offered like the free booze because people think you're
I'll take a whiskey or a beer any day of the week, you know. But yeah, so I think honestly, I dislike being, so even with preaching and that, I dislike being on stage probably a little bit too much to do it. But maybe I think like ad hoc chatting to a group of mates or doing like emceeing from time to time is probably a little bit more in the sweet spot because it's not the main thing. So you're always segueing to someone else to come up to do the dad speech or the best man speech or the dance or whatever. And so I think I feel a little bit more comfortable in that. But I definitely will do it once in my life. That's like I'll try it once.
I think most people, if you have the desire to do it, at least try it once, at least see what it's like, and just explore that side.
You never know.
You might be like, I would hate if you're a 6 out of 10 on your first time, because then I'm going to just quit.
maybe more like a 6%. Yeah,
like, well, it depends. I mean, my first time, I thought I did quite well. Other people have different memories of it. And I think that's probably the best way for your first gig to go when it comes to stand-up comedy. And I think it is how it goes for everyone. Most people think they did better than they did at their first gig. What was actually, like your first wedding like as officiating?
It was thankfully very small. It was probably about 20 people. It was, you know, Laura van der Vesthuizen, it was her mom getting remarried. Fantastic people. They like, you know, I knew Charmaine through Laura. They asked, I was like, yeah, I'd love to give it a go. And they were just so kind and sweet about it as I like bumbled my way through it. You know, I didn't think I'd come on your podcast and talk about my first embarrassing time and how everybody, you know, laughed at me and it was over way too quickly. But here we are.
Well done. You just told the joke that every stand-up comedian tells at their first gig. So
you would be
perfect for this.
I do that at weddings all the time and stuff. You know, it's fantastic. Yeah. If you don't go to the Oxford Dictionary, you go straight to the sex joke. You know. But no, they were super gracious and kind, and they dug it, and they're still married, so that's a good thing. That was my very first one.
Okay, last question, because you brought that up. Do you keep track of how many of the people that you've married have gotten divorced, and like, do you feel like you jinxed it a little?
I have a little photo thing on my phone and on my laptop of all the couples that I've been lucky enough to officiate for, and if you don't mind me saying, I will, you know, semi-regularly pray for them and stay in touch and try and see how they're doing. And there have been, I think, 4 couples out of about 100 or so that I know of that did get divorced. I wish them well. And it's sad that it's there. I hope I didn't do anything too wrong. You know, I hope the sermon wasn't too short or too funny or too bad. That is.
Dude, 4% is way below the national average. So I think that's a pretty good odds there.
100% of the people that I did funerals for have stayed, passed away. So they, that's the safest one of all. No resurrection from the dead yet. That's 100% there. But on the weddings, it's a bit sad because you just, more because you love the people, nothing to do with me and my career. A ratio, but just because you dig the people, like, and you want, you know, them to stay happy, but you know, maybe for them that is how they stay happy or get happy or whatever, you know. I think you got to go, like, we tried our best to set them up and encourage them well and stay in touch and do a good job on the day, but you know, people got to figure out this stuff all for themselves.
You're really only there for a very, very small period of it, so.
Yeah. Exactly. A wedding's not a marriage. I think we all know that, you know?
Yeah. Cool. I think that's a great place to end. Thank you so much for doing this with me. Thank you for being so open and sharing yourself. And I know these things, especially when they're recorded, are probably a bit more stressful than over a beer or a coffee.
For sure, for sure. But I mean, I really, you know, dig you, appreciate the stuff we got to work on together, and, you know, appreciate being asked to come and share. I think it's a cool, you know, thumbs up to, you know, your platform and what you're trying to do, that you'd have voices that are very, very different to share some stuff that's probably not super popular in the world.
I don't know. Like, it depends. I mean, on who listens, you know, like, yeah. But that's the thing. That's why I like to have these conversations, yeah, and have them out there for people to come to however they want to come to them. I mean, we've all got our baggage. We've all got how we see the world, but I do think it's very important to hear how, you know, other people see the world, and also to kind of humanize, like, people like you who, you know, if someone just heard, oh, you're a pastor, like, that comes with a lot of baggage, like, wherever they're coming from. If they're, like, Christian, they're going to think, you know, you're super holy and might, you know, like, have those regards there. If, you know, someone's atheist, they might immediately not like you, or might, you know, think, oh, this guy's an idiot. How can he believe this kind of stuff? You know, like, so that's the thing. Obviously, people are going to come with their own baggage, but hopefully by talking about things, by showing people that your pastors are people too, in a lot of cases. I mean, like, in other cases, you know, you do have your scam artists, you do have your people who are doing damage. And yes, we need to call those people out. And I'm sure, you know, that's stuff within your environment that you guys have to deal with yourselves. So that's the thing. To me, it's important to try and talk to people who I respect and whose stories I want to get out there, and who I've learned a lot from you, bro. That's the thing. That's the honest truth.
Likewise.
So yeah, I just wanted to try and share that with other people. So again, thank you very much, bro.
And maybe can I just say, you know, in the very few articles that I did for Durban Is Yours, I don't think you ever got any scathing hate mail, but maybe you'll get some now. You never know. So this, if nothing else, maybe that'll come of this, you know? Get a few emails. You never know.
Some engagement, like the old days.
Yeah, exactly. Bro, thanks so much, Bob.
Yeah, you too, bro. Thank you.
Cheers, eh?
Cool. Cheers.